if we could get our meeting started, I'd ask everybody to please take a seat.
All right, good morning and welcome. We will begin our East West Gateway Council of Governments Board of Directors meeting. Today is September 25th, 2013. And we have somebody here taking the role, so what we'll do is we will now move to the approval of minutes for July 31st, 2013. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, there were a couple corrections on the minutes, so we have those at the gas.
All right.
Jim, help me with the correction. Bill is...
The first correction was interoperable communications. Where we added some more detail as to the conversation. The second was regarding the loop trial link. The dollar amount was incorrect in the minutes that went out to you. It's at $300,000. It's actually $430,000. And then authorization to receive funding from the community was added.
It was just figures that had gone out to you incorrectly. You had approved it last time. So the correct minutes, the correct figures there.
So now move with the corrected comments for minutes.
Okay. Substitute motion for approval of the corrected minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
Any other discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimously approved. We'll now go to the discussion items. Item 3A, where we stand, update, manufacturing sector.
Mr. Chairman, if you notice, your agenda was rather short, and I think everybody probably expected a 12-minute meeting. It won't be a 12-minute meeting. But all three items that are coming into discussion, they're important items that we are trying to prepare you for, because it'll be things that we will probably be taking action on that really affects and accomplishes some things throughout the year. So the first one, where we stand, update manufacturing section. John Posey, our director of research.
Thanks. So as you know, every few years we publish a document called Where We Stand to compare St. Louis to other metropolitan areas across a range of indicators. In between, we publish shorter publications that we call Where We Stand updates. They give us a chance to dig a little bit deeper into some of these issues. And last week, we published one on manufacturing, and I'm going to tell you about it. So, you know, historically, St. Louis has been considered a major manufacturing center. In 1969, manufacturing employed almost 300,000 people in the region. By 2010, that had dropped down to about 106,000. So in that 40-year period, we had lost about two-thirds of our manufacturing jobs. But in spite of that, manufacturing is still very important to the region. You can see it employs 9% of the region's workforce. And these, on average, are high-paying jobs. The average is $79,000 a year. People are sometimes surprised and skeptical when I say that, but you got to remember that this includes the engineers at Monsanto or at Boeing, and it really underscores the point that a lot of manufacturing jobs these days do require college degrees. You may recall the Great Study found that that manufacturing accounts for almost a quarter of the region's economic output, and most of the region's foreign exports too. So. Please don't let anybody talk about manufacturing in the past tense in this region. We're still a big manufacturing town. This chart shows the decline since 1990, both in the United States and in the St. Louis region. St. Louis is the white line and the United States is the black line. So a couple of things worth commenting on here. One is that you can see that the two trend lines track pretty well, so we're not on our own. What happens in St. Louis reflects American competitiveness generally. The other thing to point is that if you just look at the last couple of years, you can see that that we seem to have bottomed out and maybe even begun increasing, and that's true both in the United States and in this region. From 2010 to 2012, manufacturing jobs in this region increased from about 107,000 to about 110,000. And the economy did slow down in the last half of last year. But I saw some June numbers that had manufacturing for the region up at around 111,000. So they appear to have bottomed out, and there may be a recovery going on. This is just a view of the same thing. This shows year-over-year change. So if you're above the red line, you're in positive territory, and below it, you're in negative territory. So from 1990 to 2010, there were only 2 years that had positive growth. One was here in 1995, and we had pretty solid growth, and then we had more modest growth in 1998. Other than that, it's been all negative territory until, again, these last 2 years. You can see we experienced some decent growth in 2011, more modest in 2012. But as I say, we've recovered a few more jobs again this year, so a lot of things could still go wrong, but we need to watch carefully to see if this continues. So here's how we compare to some of our peer regions. If you've been in this room before, you've probably seen charts like this. We rank 35 metro areas on different indicators, and then we highlight St. Louis so you can see at a glance where we stand. So in 1992, you can see that St. Louis was 12th on the total number of manufacturing jobs. By 2012, we had slipped to 17. That may not look so bad, but if you look at this third chart, you can see that in that period, 1992 to 2012, we really got hammered. We lost about 40% of our manufacturing jobs, and so we lost a greater percentage of our manufacturing jobs than Detroit and Cleveland and Pittsburgh. So those were hard years, but if you look at the last chart here, you can see that we're rising more to the middle of the pack. We had solid growth in those 2 years, and there were 8 metros that continued to lose manufacturing, and we weren't in that category. So things have looked up a little bit the last couple of years. Sorry this graph is so confusing, but the main point I want to make is just to look at the white line there, which shows manufacturing. It compares how manufacturing compared to other sectors. And the point of this is just that other sectors in the region either increased in this period or held their own. So the decline in manufacturing was unique. The big winners in this period were professional and business services, healthcare, and leisure and hospitality. And the other two major sectors, government and retail, were essentially flat. Now, I asked our GIS staff to map out manufacturers in the region, and I knew that every county had some manufacturing, but even so, I was a little bit surprised to see just how widespread it was. Really, it's in every corner of the county, from Gerald over there in Franklin County, over to up in Highlands and Madison County, and everywhere in between. This is just a slightly different view. It shows density with the densest concentration of manufacturing jobs in red. So again, it just really shows that manufacturing is part of really every community in this region. A good report from the Boston Consulting Group explained some of the reasons that American manufacturing is becoming more competitive and gave some hope that that it may be a stable trend. One of the reasons is the change in fuel prices. We've had something of a natural gas boom in this country over the last few years. And a lot of that natural gas has gone into electricity. So natural gas prices have actually fallen in this country in recent years to the point that now in Europe, natural gas is 3 times as expensive as it is here, and in Asia, it's 5 times as expensive. So if you're an energy-intensive industry, that's a big consideration. There's been a lot of wage convergence, too. As recently as 2000, the average American wage was 22 times the average Chinese wage, 22 times. Now it's more, because wages have gone up in China in recent years, now it's more around 4 times, or advantaged about 4 times as much. So that's a pretty dramatic convergence in a pretty short period of time. I found this interesting. Some industrial land in Shanghai will cost you about $17 a square foot, and it's higher in some other areas. In this region, the cost is under $4 a square foot, and you can find better bargains than that. So a lot of the prime industrial space in China has been eaten up. And the prices are going up a lot. And you could say, well, yeah, but they could just move further inland and take advantage of lower land prices. And that's true. But if they do that, and they're further away from the ports and further away from those good urban roads, and the transportation costs go up. Another factor is that the United States does remain a leader in research and development. About a third of all patents issued worldwide are from the United States. And the Chinese yuan has appreciated in recent years as well. So all of these things have made the U.S. more competitive and give some hope that that may remain the case in coming years. So in conclusion, I just leave you with the thought that American manufacturing appears to be becoming more competitive, but it's up to people in this region to make sure that we grab our share of that increased demand for American products. And it really points to the importance of a lot of regional initiatives that are going on right now. You can think of the Chamber with their initiative on education, all the good work that the Chamber and the Leadership Council do to recruit businesses and sectors where the region is competitive. There are a host of economic development projects around the region to find suitable sites for manufacturing. All those are important, and I think all of this really underscores the importance of the freight study and of making sure that we do what we can to implement some of those recommendations. So I thank you for listening, and I welcome any discussion.
Any questions?
Sir?
I was wondering, I heard that China actually had decided that they are becoming concerned with pollution, air pollution, and that they're actually dropping a lot of coal-fired plants for electric, and what they're doing with their manufacturing is they are actually saying to some manufacturers that you can only be open 3 days a week or 2 days a week. Is that a trend? Or my understanding is like 2015 that. By then, we could become with labor, like you were saying, we could become pretty competitive with China, actually.
Yeah, you know, I've heard some things like that, too. I can't speak to it in detail, but I also know that they're investing heavily in a lot of alternative energies to try to reduce reliance on coal. So that'll be another challenge, I think, in coming years, is making sure that they don't become the leaders in those green technologies. Just parenthetically, one of our staff here at East Westgate, I went to a conference in China last year, and he said he couldn't go outside. He couldn't leave his hotel room because he got so sick from the air pollution. So it's just a panic. Yes, sir.
Based on this, with all the money we've spent subsidizing retail development, the retail sector's flat.
Yep.
Say yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask, how did he get the figures that we were beginning to get so competitive now with China? How did you pull those figures?
There was there's a report from the Boston Consulting Group that relayed a lot of this information, and that's cited in the Where We Stand update there. You can feel free to contact me if you want, and I'll send you the document.
Anything else?
And Mr. Chairman, I think the key thing is the freight study has just been completed. We don't want to, again, let that sit on a shelf at a desk. We really need to move forward on that because we can use some of those things and to our advantage for our region. So we want to do that.
Great.
Thank
you so much. Our next discussion item is the draft of the one STL plan.
All of you have received the draft plan that the HUD grant, commonly referred to as the HUD grant, and we have 11 partners. It's not just East West Gateway grant, 11 partners. So starting off, we have about, I think, three of our partners that are going to participate in the presentation also, but David Wilson with East West, start us off, give us a little background.
Thank you, Ed, and good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
As Ed mentioned, we have with us today Chris Chadwick with Focus St. Louis, and you'll hear from all three of these folks. Kim Chella from Citizens for Modern Transit and Steve Ivendahl with Heartland's Conservancy. So they're going to share the presentation with me this morning. One St. Louis or one STL, a regional plan for sustainable development, has been in process now for over 2 years. And I'm going to introduce Chris Chadwick to give you a little history on the community engagement that kicked off this plan 2 years ago.
Okay. Good morning. we are really excited to be here this morning because it's hard to believe that actually it's almost 3 years ago. As you recall, our St. Louis region was awarded a $4.7 million HEAD grant to begin a planning process to develop a regional sustainability plan for the East West Gateway jurisdiction of Ada County. So this was our sort of goal to create a prosperous, healthy, and vibrant future for our region, and I think that's something that all of us can buy into and feel strongly about. Again, it's been a very broad-based effort, and I think all of the partners are really proud of the work that we've been doing. As you can see, there are 11 consortium partners, and again, I think all of us should feel really proud. I think sometimes our St. Louis region has a reputation of competing for mega grants like this. This was a time where, again, East West Gateway took the lead in gathering a broad-based constituency group to come together, put our heads together, and apply for this grant, which we were, again, thrilled to receive. It's been a process that's been incredibly inclusive. You can see the partners. There were three different committees that were in operation during the last close to 3 years. Probably involving a couple of hundred volunteers that were meeting monthly, quarterly, but were very, very engaged in the process. Focus St. Louis was delighted to take the lead on the community engagement process. So we had community planning areas, 11 of them, in 7 of the 8 counties. We are really proud to say that we had 3 rounds of planning meetings over this close to 3 years. It was actually 2 years that we were actually in the field. 39 different committee meetings involving over 45 municipalities and cities, and most importantly, engaging 1,500 citizens in the process. And so it was a chance for us to really get out as the process moved forward, talk with citizens, really listen to them, interact with them, engage them, and we have kept a database of all of the people that have participated in the process. So as the process unfolded, we continued to reach out electronically and through the mail to folks that had been engaged, to keep them engaged, and I think that's something that's going to be really important as we hopefully begin to implement the planning process. So again, like you heard, from where we stand, we don't want this plan to gather dust. We want this plan to be a live document and actually make a difference in our community. So, turn it back to David.
Thank you. So, Chris described the community engagement process, and this little chart shows a lot of the way in which a lot of work merged to create the plan, the actual printed document that you were sent last week. The community engagement actually started with a telephone survey that was conducted through 7 of the counties in the region. We then had the community planning meetings that Chris mentioned, and they were intentionally selected to have representative communities from throughout the region. At the same time that was going on, our other partners were busy developing plans, hiring consultants in some cases, and we actually ended up producing 75 plans. If you look right behind Mayor Slay, you'll see 2 stacks of documents that represent most of those plans that have contributed then to the information that is in this plan, trying to pull together and distill information both from the community engagement and the technical studies that have been developed over the last few years. We're wrapping up a couple of more studies that are still underway, and they'll be done by the end of December when our grant funding actually runs. Those plans also, by the way, as this chart indicates, had a lot of public engagement tied in them. The themes then that we came up with came largely from the community engagement process. We heard from the public concerns, things that they liked about their communities, things that they were looking to do and achieve in the future. And collaborative, that's the list, intentionally perhaps because we engaged in every one of the community planning areas more than one municipality. So there was a lot of discussion about how municipalities could work together. Distinctive rose high on the list because everywhere we went, we heard from the public, I like my community. We like where we live. We have problems here, or we have problems and challenges there, but we like this community. And what we heard over and again throughout the region was, people have a choice of where they live. People can live in a denser development near the center of the region. They can live in an outlying community with larger lots. They have choices, and most people choose to live where they want to live because of that choice. And that's distinctive then, is fostering not a plan that will require everybody to do the same thing, but rather a plan that encourages voluntary participation by local governments to achieve the vision for their community, but to do it in partnership with a region of communities so that we can all strengthen our economy and the quality of life for the region as a whole. As I mentioned, we have that stack of reports. This list just identifies some of the key reports that were done. St. Louis County government took the lead, county planning, in developing a number of code and ordinance reviews that are going to help them in their planning going forward. We have housing assessments that were done locally for St. Louis County and also regionally. We had environmental studies. A number of them were done in the Metro East by Heartlands Conservancy. And I'm going to turn to Stephen Ivendahl in just a minute to tell you a little bit more about that. And those are the reports that covered the non-transportation related elements. We also had a lot of reports and studies dealing with transportation issues, including development of 9 biking and walking plans for individual municipalities or counties, best practices guides that municipalities can use going forward. And then our largest single focus is on transit-oriented development along the entire metro line. I'm going to ask Kim Chella to tell you a little bit about Citizens for Modern Transit and their role.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
David Hessling can talk a little bit about our role as one of the 11 partners on this grant. We were happy to serve on this grant. We knew that transportation and public transit would play a key role in any regional planning grant forward. Some of the areas that we focused on over the last 3.5 years were TOD, the TOD study. We also commissioned 4 local Urban Land Institute technical assistance panels. We tried to focus on every area that the light rail system hit. We used Belleville Station, Upsall South Grand, and a possible new station at Cortex. What we found exciting during our work on this grant is that we didn't just do planning. We began to see communities and stakeholders take it to the next level and start to see some implementation. We saw a Chapter 353 formed around the Umsel South Station. We were able to leverage our work on this grant to get additional private grant funding to actually create form-based overlay zoning around 2 of the stations on our alignment, one in the city of St. Louis and one at the Rock Road in Pagedale. So we are excited to see not only the plans that have been made, as Chris referenced, but actually communities and municipalities getting on board to actually start the implementation process around some of these plans. Moving forward, we know that transportation and public transit will play a key role in just in more than one of those themes. They could probably touch all 9 other themes that David referenced earlier. So as a partner, we look forward to working with communities, municipalities, city of St. Louis, and Orange County on seeing these plans move forward.
Thank you. And next, Stephen Ivendahl of Heartlands Conservancy.
Good morning. Stephen Ivendahl of Heartlands Conservancy. Heartlands Conservancy reinvests in the nature of southwestern Illinois through land conservation, building greener communities, and engaging the public with natural resources. We've been excited to partner in this process. We've easily integrated other partners. So highlights of the things we've been involved in through this process. We did mention a lot of the work we focused on environmental. We shared the environmental best practices at committee. You'll see some of the other reports there. Just want to highlight briefly the report you see on the screen of a water infrastructure in the St. Louis region. One thing we highlighted was the strengths and weaknesses of our water, especially our water supply here in the St. Louis region. A lot of us understand the strengths of our rivers in terms of shipping, the importance of the rivers to the shipping. The Freight Study and others have kind of raised the awareness of that we're the second largest inland port, number one port, inland port for grain and other ag products. Some businesses might be, you know, thinking about relocating, might be interested in that fact. But our rivers also supply an abundant water supply. The one thing we found through our report was even at times of drought and low water in the rivers, the St. Louis region has an abundant, for the most part, has an abundant water supply. So compared to other parts of the region, like the southeast, southwest, in terms of economic development, the water supply will be more of an issue in the future. In terms of future implementation, we want to highlight the three items. One is the complete streets. There's a lot of partners on both sides of the river working on improved bicycle and pedestrian connections. One of our roles is complete streets. You see there at the upper right, some bike commuters in O'Fallon, Illinois, this past spring. We've been working with some communities, especially in St. Clair, on passing complete street resolutions this past 6 months. Just in the past 6 months, we've had half dozen communities, city councils passed resolutions in support of complete streets. Belleville just passed a resolution last week. Green infrastructure. There's a lot of benefits with a regionally connected system of green infrastructure, higher quality of life, recreation, etc. I just want to highlight one of the benefits in terms of flooding and stormwater control. You see the vision there on the lower left. Scott Air Force Base parking lot earlier this year during kind of one of the flash floods we had earlier this spring. And to solve that, it's kind of a multi-pronged solution. But one of those solutions is utilizing green infrastructure. And we started taking steps to raise awareness of those solutions. You see there in the lower right, a picture from our first annual green infrastructure breakfast this past May. You see there Mayor Miller Collins will kind of welcoming that breakfast. And then finally, the Tokyo Balance World Heritage. We're working on a feasibility study looking at possible increased federal recognition of Tokyo Mounds. David mentioned earlier St. Louis region being distinctive, reported as being distinctive. Tokyo Mounds, not only the site there in Illinois, there's 500 mounds on both sides of the river. It's an opportunity for future interpretation, future ecotourism. There's a lot of potential there. It's one of the few world heritage sites in the country. How many world heritage sites does Chicago have and some of our surrounding cities? It's the same number as Cubs World Series titles the last 100 years. So I think when we talk in terms of distinctive, we really have a chance to open down the future cultures and really leverage that in the future.
Thank you. Now, in addition to the hard copy document, we've developed with our partners two separate websites. The onestl.org website has these plans are all available in a PDF electronic version. So you could, if anybody's interested in anything, they can find it immediately on that site. And in addition to that, we've developed a toolkit of best practices. Now, this is distilled largely from these plan documents back there. There are best practices for municipalities seeking to achieve transit-oriented development or complete streets or safe biking programs or best green infrastructure practices. There's a wide range of topics already there, about 100 topics. We're still in the process of editing it. There's a comment form. If you happen to look at it or your staff look at it, they can provide comments online back to us, and that is right into our database. You can also provide comments on the plan that way, by the way, on the website. The second, we first went, and I'll talk about 1STL. This is what the website basically looks like. you can click here or up here to reach the plan itself. Sustainable Solutions Toolkit here or up on top. And we have a section on metrics that is being developed and will be added shortly. There's background on the partners and then other information on special programs that's available here. If you go to the toolkit, you can type in your question here and hit go and go right to the topic. Hopefully it'll be there. Or you can search on the categories that are given for you. When you get to a particular topic, we have background how-to, planning and zoning information, costs and benefits of a particular measure that's being considered, ways to measure success, and local case studies. Our objective long-term is to have local municipalities identified with all 100 of these topics. Right now, many of them are lacking a local case study. It's partly just because we haven't had the opportunity to converse with everyone in the region. So as we get information, we're adding that into the case study information. And then discover more additional information available through the web. Now, the second website is being managed by St. Louis University, another core partner. And they have developed what we're calling St. Louis Data Exchange, or stlouisdata.org. And on this site, we're working with partners who have data to upload data to a central site where then anyone can access information about the metropolitan region. And it will be primarily in a digital map form. You can print the map, you can save it to your computer. There are also PDFs, that is, the maps that have been produced before that are already available there. But you can go in and create the map that you want for your own needs. So a nonprofit organization looking for a grant proposal and wanting some background information, for example, on health in the region, might be able to come to this site and pull out some information to support their application. So we have a lot of different products that make up One STL, just as we have a lot of partners. Tonight is our concluding meeting of a series of 10 open houses. It's at the Central Library here downtown St. Louis, along with our staff. Catherine Warner from the Mayor's Office of the City of St. Louis will be talking about the city's sustainability plan. Our open house kicks off at 5. Her presentation is at 7 tonight. You see the schedule. We brought the draft plan to you all today. And our original schedule was to come back with a revised copy with comments addressed next month for the board meeting. And then have a presentation at the annual meeting on both the plan and the toolkit and ways to use it. And then as this grant term runs out, we see implementation as a first stage is largely an outreach effort of going out to the community, to municipalities, to nonprofit organizations, making presentations and inviting others to buy into the plan, endorsing it, getting involved, identifying those issue areas where they can participate along with the partners. I would like to mention, at the beginning of the plan, there's a list of core partners, or our consortium partners, all of whom who contributed money and in-kind services to this planning effort. In addition, there's a long list of other partners. Those are people who probably participated, organizations participated in our committees, and said, you know, this particular goal, objective, strategy, we're interested in that, we want to be involved. And so their names are also already on this plan. It's not meant to be an exclusive list, it's rather an initial list. We expect to bring a lot more partners into the process over the next year, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'd be happy to take any comments, questions.
I'll start off by, first of all, saying that this particular document here is a draft, but it was put together with a lot of hard work over a period of years by a lot of very, very quality partners in the region that really are made up of a lot of people who are very knowledgeable. There was a lot of public input and that have given this a lot of thought and know what they're doing, including universities and others. And what I like about the document itself is apart from, you know, what the specifics within it, which I'm going to talk about in just a minute, is the fact that it is a document that really brings this entire region together, thinking about how we can make St. Louis, the St. Louis region, a more vibrant, healthier, and more prosperous region for more people. And that's a big deal. I mean, this isn't just about the environment. This is about making St. Louis a more vibrant place and a more prosperous place for more people. And it gets us thinking more as a region, because we are stuck on many times in our St. Louis region, looking at everything from our own little areas that we are large areas that we may represent, and what goes on beyond our borders isn't important. But I think this really gives us an opportunity to buy into a huge vision for this entire region. And many of us have our own sustainability plans. We have, in the city of St. Louis, one of the most comprehensive sustainability plans anywhere in the country. And I can tell you that, you know, getting everybody's attention, even within my own cabinet, to get them to pay attention to it, to start thinking about, you know, what we do within our own disciplines to help achieve the goals and objectives that are set out here, is a big task. And and I would recommend that everybody around this table look at this plan and read it, and think about what each of us can do individually, and then what we can all do collectively to, you know, once we get a final, you know, document here, what we can all do to make it work. Because this, we should not let all this money and all this effort go to waste. This is not easy. I have cabinet meetings with my cabinet members. We have a green team, people within my own organization. And getting, you know, somebody from the Supply Commission or somebody in, you know, the Civil Rights Enforcement Agency to think about what they're doing to advance the objectives of our sustainability plan is not easy. But if all of us put on our glasses and look at and a little different glasses, I mean, we get beyond the areas that we are used to being in and the responsibilities that we have, and think about how you know, what we're doing can and what we can do to achieve some of the goals. And as you can see, that it's not going to take a lot more money to do the things that we want to do here. I mean, there's already things we can be doing to achieve these goals. So this is not somebody else's responsibility. We do have some great partners, and we're going to get more partners and a lot of contributing organizations that are going to be at the table. But ultimately, for this thing to go forward, it's going to take a lot of us working together, you know, with a view towards achieving these goals. And that's going to take some work, and it's going to take some adjustments in what we're doing. And I think that this has a tremendous amount of potential. I would certainly expect that not everybody around this table has looked at this in detail, and I would also expect that once you do, that there may be something you have questions about, or you may even have some concerns about. And that is normal. But this, there's no mandates in here. These are goals and objectives that are set forth with a lot of, as I said, quality people and quality organizations. And to really make this effort worthwhile, we really all need to think about how, in our own individual responsibilities, how we can, what we can do, and how we can do it to achieve the goals and objectives in here. St. Louis will be a better place, not only, you know, from a sustainability standpoint and various components of what that means, but also in terms of a region that's thinking more regionally and thinking even more globally in terms of what we're competing for. We're competing for jobs, we're competing with other regions for vitality and vibrancy and to have a prosperous region. So anyway, thank you all for all your efforts. I know that this is not easy. I know that there's been a lot of bumps in the road. There's going to be many more as we go forward. But I want to let you know from my standpoint that I'm certainly going to be committed to helping make whatever the final draft, whatever the final document is, helping make sure that we work together and take individual responsibility to implement
the proposals and the things in there so that we can reach these objectives and be a better region as a result. So thank you all. Does anybody have any comments, questions?
Yes. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, one of the things that, first of all, I agree with of the largest part of what you just kept saying, this is an excellent document. One of the things that keeps coming back to me as we look at documents like this is that there's a lot of quality thinking. In addition, though, I think we've got to do more to fly the flag of the region. How do we attract the private investment? How do we attract the really big ideas, those fast-growing, really bustling companies? How do we attract the people who want to make their ideas happen but bring them to the St. Louis metropolitan region? I think that there's some of that happening, but when I see the other regions growing at a faster rate, that continues to punch me in the stomach, and I'm sure others around this table in the stomach, to say that we can't simply say, well, they go to the Southwest because of the better weather, or they go to the West Coast because of the better weather, they go to the South because of the better weather. We've got to make sure that we're flying the flag of the entire St. Louis region even more effectively.
Yeah, and hey, let me tell you something, that you're hitting the nail right on the head in terms of what we're all thinking about every day. One of the things that, and as far as competitiveness, it's really important, more so now than ever, is talent. And these companies have, you know, they have jobs available, or we're looking at trying to attract jobs. And one of the things they want to know is where are they going to get the people to fill the positions and to handle these things. So, of course, you know, education and other things are real important there. There is an organization that many of you may want to look at, and it's called LaunchCodeSTL.com. And it's an organization, and I'm not going to get into all the details. You can go online and look at it. But part of that is apparently there are nearly 10,000 computer coding and computer programming jobs in the St. Louis region available in 100 of our top companies around the region. These are jobs that are available, and they're looking to fill them. And yet we have people who may have the education, but they don't have the experience, or they don't have the education and the experience. And what this organization does for free, they pay people to get the experience while they're on the job. So instead of you paying somebody to teach you how to do this, or they will teach you on the job training. And then there is if you what you need to be doing over a period of a few months, you'll have a pretty good paying job with some good sized company in St. Louis. So I mean, these are things we need to work on, is trying to build capacity of talent necessary. And I have to tell you, the other thing is transportation. And we saw that in the transportation infrastructure study that was done. And it goes all the way from, you know, rail and air traffic, cargo capabilities and highways and those things, but also as far down to having a connective region that you can get around through transit and other forms of alternative transportation. And there was a study that was done recently that did some testing of, you know, what is it that in cities across America that really contributes significantly to upward mobility, that is moving people from being poor and poverty and getting up into the middle class. And one of the most important things is a transit system, a public transit system to get people from where they live to jobs. Because in many cases, you'll have jobs somewhere out in the suburbs, and they're looking for people to fill them, and yet you've got others in another part of the region that are trying to get them a job, and they can't get to the job. In Atlanta, as a city, people would think, well, that's probably one of the top cities in terms of upward mobility. And in the study, they were one of the worst because they don't have a good transit system. So, you know, these are things. So when you talk about transit, it's not just about, you know, the environment it's not just about, you know, saving money and trying to do things that are, you know, update and cool and all those things. It's about, you know, of course, there's a lot of reasons why transit's important and alternative modes of transportation. But getting people to and from where they need to go, and specifically the jobs, is a key to our competitiveness. And that's something we all have to focus on, I think, even more carefully. And that's something that's in this draft.
Mr. Chairman, just to expand on that, there's maybe not that well known, but the Junior College District has a laboratory. They've converted a
big box near Forest Valley campus into a laboratory for training circuit board skills, robotic skills, all different kinds of skills that are needed in industry. They plug these people right into Boeing, right into Express Scripts and different companies. So we need to be aware of the resource that we have in the junior college district. They thought way outside the box and created a laboratory to plug students that don't want to go to a four-year traditional college. They want to gain job skills immediately. They go to this laboratory and they learn the skills. That's something that we might be aware of and just to acclimate to the junior college district for doing that. That's the kind of thinking that we have going in reaching this model.
That's a great thing. And I suspect that there's going to be some comments. There may be some questions, concerns about what's in the document. Where do we go from here? This is a draft. We're not voting on it today. What happens here if somebody says, well, I have a question about this issue, or I don't like this in the document. What do we do from here?
Our original plan, since you had it last month, as far as you had it for a while this month, was to vote on it at the next meeting. But we've received comments from other outside sources too, or some of you that are suggesting some things that we consider that are not in here, or changes, or things like that. And I pulled together staff members involved in the draft. And what we can do, we must finish by December 31st. The grant goes away and the report has to be finished. Instead of voting in October, we could go ahead and continue working on this, refer it back to the steering committee with the recommendations or the concerns that you have, if it's not in there. And we do not meet in November or December, but if we could meet sometime early December as a special meeting, 10-minute meeting, something like that, after we've had a chance and after others have had a chance to even have more input on it, that may be the best way to go around and do the recommendation and if the board is so inclined. But we have to have you here the first part of at least 13 or 14 of you the first part of December at the special meeting.
When we have the answers provided?
We have to have it by the 31st.
Oh, by the 31st.
Yeah,
by
the 31st. It's the 31st.
Yeah, so
do you need a motion to that effect?
I don't need that. We can bring it to you as long as the board, I get a sense of the board that this is the way we want to go. Then this gives people that have legitimate concerns, something in there they think, have we thought it through? Have we included something? Are there things that we can include? Some things like that. And I have some lists of those.
And I think it's important to note that the things in here, there are no mandates, if you don't do them or you don't want to do them, that anybody can be penalized. But I think you'll find overall that the document, the goals, the objectives that are in here are something that we really, overall, I'm talking about overall, things we really ought to be working together on and working towards as a region. But again, it's not going to happen on its own. So it is going to be important that we get regional leaders and not just the core partners, but regional leaders to help implement this. So what we're going to do now?
We'll ask the chair to call a special meeting, try to coordinate time early December. If you get into later December and we're into the holiday season and everybody's everywhere. So first part, that gives us two more months to really work with the steering committee, because you've got 11 and different partners. I think that would give us an opportunity to even have a better knock.
We'll do that unless there's an objection. County executive, probably.
I'm going to use the true comments. It's an outstanding document. It's a start in the right direction. But let me tell you what my concern is about this type of document. And I'm going to be very parochial about it. is that when we talk about the region, I'm not quite sure what we're making reference to. We need more participation from all of our members. And what we don't have, if we talk about immigration, or the city of St. Louis, St. Louis County, okay? But I want to hear about Jefferson County, or what's going on in St. Charles County, or St. Clair. I want you guys to be up there saying, how can we help each other? And we just don't do enough of that in our Franklin County. We just don't hear enough about it. We need to focus on what are some things that we can talk about. You know, when, for example, Mayor Faye and I was talking to a reporter about crime, and they indicated the weapon having about Illinois. I mean, they're part of your geographic, they're part of the metro area. These are things that concern me as you move forward. That we got a lot of partners other than St. Louis City and St. Louis County. We got eight other counties. We got a lot of people here involved in this process. Unless we get Steve on board with some things, he's concerned about TIF finance, TIFs. Everybody got concerns, and we got to figure out how we can make those concerns our concerns as a unit. If we can do that, we get a lot more things done, a lot more participation, and we can talk about growing the region. Then that's when we begin to really grow the region. Everybody's on the same page. We can't have a few people on the same page. We need everybody, and everybody needs a process. So if the boat rises, it rises for everybody. The water rights are for everybody. And sometimes I think we miss opportunities when we don't include everybody or everybody get involved. We just got to do a better job of getting folks involved. And we all have the same focus is what? Growing the region, creating better job opportunities, quality of life. We need everybody involved in that process, not two or three. We just need eight counties involved in that process.
Anything else? Anybody has anything else on this? All right, yes.
You made a great point about the fact that it's an important point. There's nothing that mandates any of those things. A more general question, when we vote on the five, are we going to be setting policy, or are we simply going to be accepting recommendations that we can that use in the future? Yeah, I'm not suggesting that we're going to the other. But if we're actually going to be setting policy in December, I sure as heck hope everybody here reads this thing very carefully. So I guess that's the question. What's the nature of that vote?
We're going to be setting farmer versus setting policy. It's a framework there.
This is really a framework for collaboration.
So we'll be accepting
framework for collaboration. It's not a policy guide.
I still recommend everybody read.
Right.
And you know, and some things, some people say, well, you know, when I don't like this, we're not going to do this. But you know what? We can work on this, and this. And I think that's going to be the strength of this document. All right, well, thank you so much, and appreciate all your efforts. We will now move on to discussion item three.
Discussion item C will be a brief presentation by a brief transit-oriented development. It's simply an update for you, but we thought it was time that we were bringing it back.
No, just thank you so much. Very briefly, like you said. This summer we wrapped up an 18-month effort, which is a product funded by the sustainability grant, actually. And I'm just going to take 1 second to define what we mean by TOD, transit-oriented development. It's basically just development around the nexus of a transit station. Typically it's denser than the surrounding areas, a mix of uses, you have jobs, retail, living, kind of all in the same. It's also a kind of a convergence of different modes of transportation, buses, trains, automobiles circling, people on bikes, walking is always essential, so just go on from there. So why we decided to dive into this? Timing was a big piece. The down economy was kind of helped us actually be able to kind of stop and sit back and say what's going on with our stations. In 20 years of MetroLink, we have some success stories, we have some near misses. In general, we're like a lot of our peer cities, most all of our peer cities, in that it hasn't generated the types of development around station areas that people had anticipated. So time to sort of sit back and look and try to figure out what's going on while we're not, you know, responding to development proposals landing on the desks over metro. Also, just look at the entire system, not just stations that have some immediate or short-term development interest in them. What does this mean? And I'll get to that in a minute here. But then also to define TOD for our region. When you look at the national trade journals and things like that, and there's sort of this gold standard, typically east-west coast, high-growth economies, where you have very high density. You have high-growth regions in terms of economics and population. It's not us. So what does this mean for us? Do we think we can get there? What does TOD mean for St. Louis? We're not the low-hanging fruit. So a lot of those other studies for those other regions had very limited reference data for us. So we kind of had to do our own thing. What we did, started with the scope. There were a lot of efforts going on at the same time in the region. So this is from Modern Trends. We're starting to look at things. Metro, with us, we were starting to look at a few different things. St. Louis City wanted to do their own transit study. There were a number of things going on, and we decided, since we got this grant, it allowed us the opportunity to try to synchronize those efforts, identify where the redundancies were, kind of jettison those, and then craft a scope to fill in the holes. So that the intent was everything kind of became one larger organized regional effort. Of course, we had a consultant team. This little box here shows the regional partners in the process. And we defined the deliverables around three major components. Market study, again, looking at the entire system, not just this station area or that one. Framework plan, for lack of a better term, that's basically what the entire system looks like from a transit-oriented development standpoint. All of the existing 37 stations with sort of the same filter. How do they stack up against one another? What are the common issues? What are the localized issues? And then once that is done, that framework plan is essentially the main meat of the entire study. That has the most utility for the most people moving forward. We did the station area plans essentially to try to kick the tires, see if this thing's going to work the way that we think it would, and move forward from there. So we picked five station areas and dove into a higher level of detail. So the market study structure, this is kind of, market consultant broke it into seven basic areas based on catchment, market catchment for the given station areas, sub-segments, looking at the entire system, sub-segments, and then it boils down to the station area level as well. So the outcomes, that top one, if you take the market ability, the market demand potential for each of the station areas, you add that up across the entire system, the sum of all of the parts vastly outnumbers, you know, the market demand for the entire region. Just, that's another way of saying it, just reinforces the fact that we're a slow growth region. There's more market ability for each of the station areas than the entire region can support. So it's competitive. Stations, it's again, it's kind of a flat line, potentially, not entirely, but people need to, municipalities, if they want this, they need to get serious about it. They need to begin to focus on it, make their station areas attractive. Corridor segment scale, we just wanted to make sure that as investment in this station, you know, matured, that as the other one, maybe one down the line, receives investment and development, it doesn't siphon off the investment and the economic lifeline that, you know, is burgeoning in the other one. Try to develop corridor segments in complementary way. And then station area, it's really nodal development and connectivity. Of course, we don't want to get to the deal at the end of the day. So the framework plan had basic components to it. Again, looking at all the existing station areas. Targeting audience, one thing I left off of here is ourselves. We have a lot to learn. And when I say ourselves, it's all of those organizations that were listed, Metro, St. Louis City County, GRG, CMT. Prescriptive land use, transportation network, and policy. So we didn't just look and see what was going on. We decided, if we want to get to TOD, what's it going to take to get there? These are recommendations. So site-specific implementation guidance. Within the framework plan, there's a section, about 25, 30 pages for each station area. It's into detail about their development patterns, demographics, land use conditions, policy ordinances, and all of the components that sort of play around putting together a development deal, transit-oriented development deal, and isolates what the key issues are, what the key recommendations are for each given station area. So again, targeted utility for hopefully a wide range of people. In the station area plan, basically you get down to the community plan development level. And these are the five that we picked, Fairview Heights. We combined JJK Emerson Park because of the proximity. And basically, one of the things that we focused on were a range of contexts. We didn't want to pick five similar types. We wanted to learn as much as we could, again, so that there was reference value for, again, the widest range of people. We might not have done a detailed study plan for, you know, say, Swansea, but Fairview Heights may have some relevance to it. General takeaway, there are three basic categories of components for TOD. Marketability, you know, it has to make sense to invest in an area. Developers need to make the money. Municipalities, it needs to sustain itself so it doesn't get a drain. Local will, there are typical development patterns are not TOD, although we're getting a little closer to it. There's recognized market demand for more urban, denser living areas, neighborhood product type, and also favorable physical context. We have an alignment that a lot of it is in an old rail corridor, freight rail corridor. Well, that doesn't integrate well with the neighborhoods around it. So what are the issues and strategies surrounding that, how to deal with it? So the local will basically boils down to being able to clearly communicate the expectations in terms of the municipality or whoever the champion for the project is. It could be institutional, it could be political, it could be elected staff. But also to lay the necessary groundwork. There's immense pressure and a pretty cleanly oiled machine for a lot of, you know, automotive and other types of development that we have around here. We have a lot of need for that. But if a municipality wants to move towards TOD, they really have to kind of lay some groundwork, do some homework, and that the study gives them tools to begin to get there. At least lays out the issues and provides good case studies and toolbox components. So moving forward, some people involved in this, in the municipalities and in the station area, proponents have embraced it in Iraq, and St. Louis County is very interested in the North Hamlet station. For others, we have a lot of municipalities in the region that don't have a lot of resources, planning staffs and such. It's hard to stay current with some of these issues. We learned a lot from this. We want to try to get the word out there for people that are interested. So first, this is still being penciled out, but we're going to do a presentation targeted to the affected political leadership. Station areas that either seem to have good market demand or the ones that we did the station area planning efforts towards, have a symposium or, you know, 2 or 3 hour, not even that, 3. Have a presentation of what the general issues are, what the plan is, how to begin to use it. And then the tail end of that, the punchline of that is workshops for the relevant municipal staff, developers, et cetera, tailored for each station area. So if as a political elected official you come to the first meeting, it seems to resonate with some of your interests and constituent input, you want us to hold a workshop tailored to your station area, we will gladly do so. And that's not to promote this over the other, it's just to plainly say what we've learned, what we see are the major issues, and some of the strategies, best practices, case study examples, how to address it. And then the last one, continuing programming and education. CMT has been, you know, beating the drum. They will continue to do so with the programming and outreach and input. We will support that as well as we can. But education is a continuing piece. On a less formal note, we will always pick up the phone when it rings. So if people have questions today or otherwise, be sure to let us know. Is there any discussion, any questions?
Questions?
Thank you so much. That's all your work. That concludes the discussion items. Next item on the agenda, action items. I have one, 4A.
The action item should actually take the least amount of time for all of us. I think the memo was clear. It's simply authorizing move forward on another Great Streets project, Ferguson Forest. Paul is the one that heads that up, so he's there if you should have any questions. Otherwise, the recommendation stands on time.
Okay, we have a recommendation to approve, which was at the MIG meeting.
Yeah.
Yes. And do we have a motion for that?
So moved.
Seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That was unanimously approved. Any other business?
I have two things. One, at your table, if you will notice the memo one dot, something that some of you have heard me say in the last several meetings, this is something we need to move on. This is something we need approval by a certain time. During your evaluation that we go through every 4 years with federal highways, there was one requirement that we had to meet, and that was the congestion management process. We immediately moved on that, have been working on it, had it done in advance. You approved it in advance to the deadline, everything like that. You must have that in order to qualify for most of the federal money, so we don't let that get away. The letter, if I call your attention, the next to the last paragraph on the first page, totally has been reviewed and approved, signed off on, everything by federal highways. And I would also call your attention to the last paragraph. It not only approved it, but they recognized in this area how well we had worked together. You don't always get those comments, and we kind of like those comments from federal highways. We appreciate their working with us. So that is done, and we're going to keep that on file. The other thing that's important to you is there's a ball game going on. Parking is different this time. If you parked at the parking thing, $20 parking now instead of the passes. Karen has your pass to get you out of here. So don't get out of here without getting one from Karen.
Can I have one of those on Friday night?
All right, if there's nothing further, we'll entertain a motion to adjournment.
Second.
All right. Second. All right.